third hour here on this sunny Thursday afternoon here in Nashville, Tennessee. Darren McFarland, Derek Mason with you. Don't forget, before we get out of here, next couple of hours, pair of tickets to give away to see Train, Jewel, and Blues Traveler at Ascend Amphitheater on June 21st. So be listening for that coming up very, very soon. Darren McFarland, Derek Mason with you. Let's say hello to Dan Patrick, who is going to be a part of The Move, The Family, on 94.9 The Fan starting June 13th. His show will air 8 to 11 mornings here in this market. Dan, how you doing? Good afternoon.
So it's Train, Jewel, and Blues Traveler.
Yeah, it's a good show.
All right, I'm in on it.
Yeah.
Have you seen any of those acts?
Let's see. I have seen Blues Traveler. I have met Jewel. I have not seen Train.
Two out of three.
I think Jewel lives here, right?
I thought, isn't she dating Charlie
Whitehurst.
Charlie Whitehurst. Is she still with Clipboard Jesus?
Wow.
I don't. Well, if I'm him, I get called for holding. I don't let her go. I do not let her go. I love Jewel. Okay.
Well, actually, let's just go right there. Because we had this discussion on Friday. Look, it's the summer months. Who's kidding who? We're looking for this stuff. I'd rather do that than stupid polls, right, or Mount Rushmores. But we did the most – I mean, you're the perfect one to ask because we've done all the Super Bowls and the Radio Rows, so we can hold our own. But, you know, who's kidding who? Biggest name you've met. Now, this is not a hey or a head nod. Like, either I've had you on your show, you've actually hung out with, like, the biggest name. Where would you go with that?
Well, I guess I would start with Jordan. I mean, if you're talking about, are they known globally?
Well, that's what we said. It could be sports, could be musicians, but we said, like, a Jordan-esque, yes. Someone, a Jordan-type, Michael Jordan, yes.
All right. Muhammad Ali.
Oh, boy, that's good. Good.
Let's see. Music-wise, I haven't hung out with Bob Dylan, but I met him. Let's see. I'm trying to think. Prince Harry. I met him.
Okay.
I didn't hang out with him.
How do you think that would have went, by the way?
With Prince Harry, yeah. we would have done well together. we would have had fun together, I think, because judging from what I've heard when he was single, of course, we would have had some fun.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have the pressure of Prince William. Like, Prince Harry, it's like, hey, you get to be, you know, have the royalty and have the, you know, all those medals and your uniforms and all that stuff, but you don't have the pressure.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to run a country here.
No pressure.
It'd be ideal.
Right, no pressure, but you get the perks. I mean, that's it's a beautiful gig.
Yes, absolutely. If he was just Harry from London, he's not getting her for his wife. He's not.
Harry from London. I suspect you've gotten that phone call on your show. Let's go to Harry from London. What do you got?
Yeah. He's not getting her.
Okay, you win. Those are good.
Yeah.
All right, so here's the other thing today that D-Mace has started up a freaking hornet's nest here.
Oh, boy.
We are kind of thinking the Titans may be in the market for a veteran receiver coming up, maybe training camp or here in the next couple of months.
All right.
You know, we've kind of gone through the Will Fullers and Emmanuel Sanders and Cole Beasleys and those types, T.Y. Hiltons. Well, D-Mace has added one shirtless Antonio Brown into the mix.
Quickly.
That was do you need to think about it?
Well, you don't want, you know, subtraction by addition, and that's what it would be, as opposed to addition by subtraction. He giveth and he taketh away. And I just don't think you got a head coach who's not going to put up with that. You just don't. And, you know, can Tannehill deal with that and the personality, and you didn't throw. I mean, if Tom Brady can't keep him, you know, on the same page, you know, Ryan's not going to be able to. And you know, Bruce Arians is a pretty good coach at letting you be you. Vrabel's not going to put up with that stuff. No.
Well, I was a yes just because I wanted to see every Vrabel press conference with a Tums ad, because he would be endorsing Tums, and he would be unbearable to deal with if he got asked Antonio Brown questions every single day.
Well, I already feel bad for him because he says, you know, we're not trading our wide receiver. And then all of a sudden, we traded our wide receiver. And I went, what the heck just happened? That it went from, no, we're key. I never trust these. It's like Pete Carroll. We have no plans on trading Russell Wilson. And I always go, oh, yes, you do. You know, when they say something like that, we have no plans. Yeah, you probably have plans. You may not want to trade him, but you're going to trade him. I felt bad for Vrabel that day, and I went, wow. Because you got to walk your words back, and you're like, you know, you feel bad because you can't really tell the truth when you go to the press conferences.
Now, Dan, when you trade a guy like A.J. Brown away, we're talking to Dan Patrick, the legend, the man.
Have you been on his show, Derek?
I've ever been on Dan's show. No.
I got the Vanderbilt coach. I thought I was getting you, and it was so awkward. And then all of a sudden, a couple of questions in, and I go, nope, wrong guy.
Dan, I'll keep this short and sweet. Our audience has heard this story. That actually happened on this show. We were at SEC Media Days, and you know how it is. And Derek, we're on Radio Row at SEC Media Days in Hoover. And the station from Memphis, mm-hmm. and they were all over D-Mace to come on their show. So he did, and they introduced him as Vanderbilt football coach Derek Mason.
I started to continue to go with it, but then I didn't want to get him in trouble because I would have said something. I would guarantee wins everywhere, and that wouldn't have been good.
It would have been great if you called out Saban and you said, he's narcissistic, and you know what? He cheats, and you get into his quality. You know, do what Jimbo did.
Oh, man. Yeah, you're right. Now, with going back to the AJ thing, with him being traded, and they've had some hits and some misses with their draft picks, John Robinson and Mike Vrabel. How will this look for the Titans if AJ goes and has a monster season with the Philadelphia Eagles?
Well, you run that risk. How much do you want to spend? How much is too much to spend? And I think, you know, that's what these GMs run the risk of all the time. Kansas City traded Tyreek Hill. So Kansas City, you know, they do have Kelsey. We'll see if Hardman can step into a situation like that. But if Kansas City can let Tyreek Hill go because he was going to be too expensive, Davante Adams, you know, leaving Green Bay. It feels like wide receivers are interchangeable to a certain degree. Like, there's so many of them now. Look at Alabama. I mean, they put out 5-6 first-rounders, and it feels like that's what's being developed now. And as you start to get better pay at the wide receiver position, more players are going to want to play that position. And I think that if I'm Tennessee, I got to ride out my running game for as long as I can, because there's a shelf life to that as well. And then I got to figure out, is Ryan going to be there? How long is he going to – like, who are we now and who are we going to be? And that can help you, I think. A lot of teams don't have an identity, or they don't know what their identity is until it's too late, where they think they're a playoff team and then they're not. And I think with Tennessee, the window is closing with what we – you know, who we know them as. Now it's up to that front office, you know, whether it's Mike or John, to recreate, reinvent – who the Titans are going to be in the next 5 years from now. And it feels like teams have five-year plans because you're drafting a quarterback, and chances are, first round, you're getting him for 5 years. This is our game plan. And Tennessee's going to go down that road as well here, and it might start this season.
Now, do you like the way, you know, that the NFL is going? It's sort of becoming, to me, especially this season, sort of like basketball, where you have a bunch of these marquee players that 10 years ago wouldn't have been traded, whether it's quarterbacks, whether it's receivers, defensive tackles. You're talking about guys that are still at the peak of their career that are being traded, and you didn't see that before. You saw it in basketball all the time, but you never saw that in football. If they have a marquee guy like that, they usually find a way to sign him. But this year has been sort of, you know, a change of the way the GMs are thinking. Do you like the way it's going?
Well, I would like for it to be what it was like when I was growing up, but that's not fair to the players. Uh-huh. The players want to go if it's money, if it's an opportunity, if it's a city they want to be in. And I certainly understand that. Nobody prevents me from doing that in my business. But I do think that the money, like Aaron Donald, keeps saying he's going to retire. He's not going to retire. But it's, you know, he's trying to create leverage where there's not really leverage because he's got a couple of years left on this deal. But he's woefully underpaid. And you give that impression of, I could retire. Or maybe you trade me. Davante Adams, he just wanted to play with Derek Carr. I don't begrudge him for that. Is it the right move? It is for him. The Browns with Baker Mayfield, I wouldn't have extended him. The Bears, Mitchell Trubisky, I wouldn't extend him. You've got these guys who get to the point where they have a little bit of power, and they're going to use it, whereas before, you didn't have it. You may have had it, you just didn't know you had it. And now, today's athlete, it feels like they're a little bit more empowered, therefore they can dictate what's going to happen. And you can break, you know, you can rip up a contract with 2 years left. That never happened before. They're like, you're going to play until the last day of that contract, and we'll decide if we want to give you another one. The money, defensive players are going to start making over $30 million a year at some point. We're going to have the, you know, the first non-quarterback making over $30 million a year. I thought T.J. Watt was going to be that guy. It's unheard of. You know, what would Reggie White be worth today? Mean Joe Green, Lawrence Taylor. So that's what I find interesting now is how do you utilize that star? How long do you utilize him? Can you have him give us a team-friendly deal so we can continue? Like Brady would do that. I'll give you a team-friendly deal. I want to get my money down the road, but I want to make sure I'm still playing for championships. How many players will do that? How many teams will do that? I think really that's the chess game that's going on because eventually you know you can't afford everybody.
Let's wrap it up with this. Do you think the Colts or the Titans are the favorite for the AFC South?
Colts.
Hmm. Seems to be the new trend.
Mm-hmm.
So you believe in Matt Ryan?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I do. I think I like Frank Reich. They have a really good running game. They have a good offensive line, and they have a they got a couple playmakers on defense. And if I put Matty Ice in the dome with them, he's probably going to be a little bit better at his age than he would have been if he's, you know, going to be playing in the elements. But I do like them. I know what I'm getting with them, I think, a little bit more than I know what I'm getting with the Titans. Tannehill is underrated. How much can I load up with Derrick Henry? Like, how long can I I've seen these running backs. You know, it could be Christian Okoye. It could be, I mean, run down the list of these guys who just take on punishment. They give punishment, but eventually, you know, you have a shelf life there. And as great as he's been, at some point, you can't go to him as much as you once did. And then who are you? And do you have those weapons where Ryan can be a better player than maybe what he really is because he's got the weapons around him? And I thought you guys were my dark horse Super Bowl pick this past year.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Thought you know, Kansas City was going to play for the Super Bowl, and I thought that the Titans, that, you know, I really went back and forth at the beginning of the year. Thought the Titans were going to be a team that was going to play for the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. Thought that much of them. That's changed, though.
It has. It has. By the way, we've already lived that scenario you played out. One of the other names is in this market. We've already, because D-Mace played with him, Eddie George. Same thing.
Yeah. Yes.
We lived it.
It's just you can only – Earl Campbell. Mm-hmm. I mean, Earl giveth, but they took it away from Earl Campbell. They're just Eric Dickerson. These guys who took on contact, as much as we look at the damage they do – Jerome Bettis. I talked to Buss about this before. He said, you know, eventually it's your leg. And like, they go after your legs. They can't tackle you up high. They go after your legs. And, you know, after a while, those legs give out.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope Derek continues to – he's one of the surprise guest I've ever had on the show. Every Super Bowl, we would have him on when he was out there, you know, endorsing something. I thought he was a delight. He was a pleasure. He was funny. You know, I was pleasantly surprised. And a lot of times we do our research to go, okay, what kind of interviewer is he or interviewee? And it was one of those where when he sat in front of me, and I knew he was going to play. He'd have some fun a little bit, and I always appreciated that. Those are the kind of guys that you hope stay longer mm-hmm. because you enjoy watching them because, you know, you probably have a little bit more of a investment in them personally.
No doubt. By the way, on the way out, have you ever slapped anybody in your fantasy football league?
This year?
Well, anytime. I mean.
Oh, okay.
what, are you in that Mike Trout league? Wait a minute. Do we have a breaking news out there?
No. Okay. No. No.
Yeah, no. I know. But I've never seen it either.
I'll give you an idea of how – I know we're up against a break. I'm sure we are. But I
we
had
blew
knee
by
surgery.
It.
Yeah, we did. Good. I love that. I don't stop at stop signs. So I'm having knee surgery.
It's a rolling stop.
The early 1980s, and I am going to check myself out of the hospital in New York. I have to get on the subway, and I have to make my way to Brooklyn. And I'm getting out, it's like 4:25, and I'm doing the math, and I might make it home for 5 o'clock, my fantasy draft. I'm on crutches, I'm on Vicodin, I think, or Percocet, and I'm on the subway. I shouldn't have checked myself out to begin with. just, you know, when you start to take things out of your body, and you're like, I'm getting out of here. And I'm on the subway, and I see West 4th is the stop, and I start to do the math, and it was 10:05. Now, I know I'm not going to make it to Brooklyn. I get out, go up the steps. I stand at a payphone. They had payphones back then. Mm-hmm. For 2 hours after surgery, drugged up, and I called in for my fantasy draft. I ended up winning the league.
Oh, my gosh.
I had Kelvin Bryant. I had Gary Clark. I had Ricky Sanders. You know, I had all the Washington guys. Mm-hmm. And because I couldn't focus, and I just started naming players. I didn't have any information. I didn't have any notes. I had to go, is anybody taking Ricky Sanders? No. I'll take Ricky Sanders. Player, all right, you're taking him pretty high. I might have taken Kelvin Bryant. He was still in the USFL, for all I know.
I am high. Take him.
Yeah. Taking him high. Yeah. But, yeah, just a note to you kids, don't check out of the hospital on Vicodin or Percocet.
Dan, good stuff. Welcome to the family. We're excited.
Derek, thank you.
Yep, good to talk to you. Thanks for doing this.
All right, guys.
That is Dan Patrick, 8 to 11, Monday through Friday, 94.9 The Fan, starting June 13th. We'll come back. More DDC next. Back here on the DDC, we'll have some cool tickets to give away. Even Dan Patrick said, man, that's a good prize. Be listening for that.
Absolutely.
Dave Neal coming up soon. And this has been a fun show, really fun show. And then we'll have Elliot Friedman at 1 o'clock. But it is hard to believe. And a bunch of people reaching out saying, that was an awesome interview. And I still can't believe all these years. I don't think that's – I'm convinced. I would have remembered. Mm-hmm. That's the first time we've ever had him on.
Well, better late than never.
Yeah, it was well worth it, right? Mm-hmm. He said no on Antonio Brown.
Yeah, he did.
It was actually a quick no.
Yeah, it was quick. As soon as you said Antonio, no.
Yeah.
You could have said Antonio Brownlee or Antonio Buckhead. And he was like, no. As soon as you said Antonio, nope.
It's mm-hmm. more likely to say yes to Antonio Bryant.
Yeah. Yeah, and I still would say no to him, too.
John from Columbia on our text line says that he listens to the show because I crack you up. And he says it gives him a good laugh every day.
Well, that's good, man.
Yeah.
Make you laugh. And informative. Very.
I'm glad I can crack you up.
Yeah, there you go. So who's going to put them back together?
See what he did?
You like that?
That's why you listen, John. Right there. Woo!
You like that? My Spartan dog, Kirk Cousins. You like that?
I don't believe he's ever going to play again. I do think what you've thrown out there and posed is legit because it is tempting. Mm-hmm. Because think about it. Tampa has Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. Those are two number ones.
Yes.
And they still went out and they got him. Mm-hmm. They have two number one receivers. How many teams can say that? They have two stud receivers.
And they had a number one tight end.
And they had a number one tight end. And they still went and got AB. Mm-hmm. That's not the case here. So there is a temptation. Look, if we didn't have all the – but, you know, it wouldn't be that easy, right? If mm-hmm. You can't just disregard the large file cabinet is Antonio Brown's history. You can't disregard that because that would be a totally different animal. He'd already be on a team, mm-hmm. right? Because that's just, that has to come with the name. It is tempting, though, if you are looking for help. But I do believe, and I'll stand by it, I think how it ended in Tampa, you just can't do that. I think with – already the history that it's littered mm-hmm. with all kinds of carnage, I don't believe that you can – I don't think anybody's going to sign up to go down that road again. It's just not – to me, it's not worth it.
I wouldn't say never because this league is about winning. And, again, this league has shown that, hell, look at Cleveland. Prime example.
Yep.
This league has shown. Now, granted, he hasn't been convicted of anything, and it's not a legal matter, but it's more civil than anything. But Cleveland basically told you what the NFL has been telling everyone for years. And they're telling you, like, on the biggest screen in the theater. Remember the guy was yesterday? Mm-hmm. You know, you need to go see it because they're going to take it off the big screen.
4DX or whatever.
They're going to take it off the big screen.
Because Jurassic Park's coming out.
Jurassic Park is coming out, so they're going to take it out. So you need to go see Maverick. The NFL is basically telling you that on a huge screen. If your talent outweighs the problems, then come on in. Mm-hmm. The door is open. That's why I would never say he's never getting back in the NFL. Because there's going to be one team that's desperate enough that says, like Tampa said, like New England said, like Oakland said, like Pittsburgh thought after they gave him the money, we can manage him. We can make sure he stays concentrated on football and nothing else. He will be happy here. Every team has said that. So what tells me one more team won't say that? Or two more. If they're desperate enough. And to me, the Titans are pretty desperate.
Well, it would have to be. But here's why. Yes. But to me, it feels like it's got to be a team that's desperate. And they feel like they're in. But they're one piece away. It's the piece that pushes them. Like. For example, mm-hmm. Green Bay. I mean, as long as you have Aaron Rodgers,
you're
in the mix.
Yeah, you're in the seat.
And the NFC got weaker in the offseason, right? Mm-hmm. Because of the defections to the AFC. The AFC is the strong, heavy conference. Mm-hmm. The NFC got weaker. So Green Bay lost their number one elite receiver.
They lost their best offensive weapon beside their quarterback.
Yeah. Is it that tempting? You know they're going to be
good. Yeah, it is. And who's to say Green Bay isn't thinking about it?
Oh, I don't know.
You know? They might just wait until they figure out what's going on in their receiver room. And if they don't see any progress, then they just might go out and do, you know, what many say won't happen. And I think the Titans, again, it's easy for me to make the argument to not bring them in. We can do that. Darren's done it. Willie's done it. You know, Dan came on and he did it. It was a quick no. Jonathan did. No. That's the easy argument. The hard argument is trying to convince a team to take them. You know? And not that y'all had legitimate arguments. They're all legitimate.
Mm-hmm.
But me trying to get him on the team, I said before, listen, I don't care if he's here or not. It doesn't make me any difference. But if you want to win right now, then maybe that's something you need to explore.
Joey from Gallatin on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com says, I've listened to the show for years, and I've always enjoyed it, but I'm so happy to have D-Mace back on. The show hasn't been the same without you. Big dog.
Thank you, my brother. I appreciate
it. I don't know if Joey was calling himself Big Dog or you Big Dog. I think he was calling you Big Dog. I think.
I take it.
Yeah, either way. Thank you, Joey. We'll come back. Dave Neal, we'll talk to him next. It's been a loaded show today. We've had a lot of fun. Back here on the DDC, Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, Derek Mason with you. Let's say hello to Dave Neal. Always enjoy our chats with him, ESPN, SEC Network. Dave, good afternoon. How you doing?
Hey, fantastic. Thanks for having me on. It's a great time of the year if you love college baseball.
Oh, man, is it ever. I did want to ask you real quick before we get into that. There's a lot of talk of the 8 or 9 conference games route for football down the road. What would you like to see in the SEC, and where do you think it's really headed in a couple of years? Do you think they're going to add an extra conference game?
I think they will. There is a late push by a few of those schools. I think you probably touched on it all morning or all afternoon, that really want to stick to 8. And I can see both sides, but I think the big picture for this league moving forward, I think what television wants, I think what fans want, and I think what some heavy hitter coaches want is a 9-game schedule. And I think if you want to play these teams, I mean, obviously you're not going to be able to catch everybody, especially when it's a 16-team league. But if the playoff expands any, I don't think you hurt yourself. And there's an argument that if you play 9 games, obviously you could lose 2 conference games and be knocked yourself out, but you could be still one of the best teams. But I think if you expand the playoffs, I don't think that's as much of a factor. Now, speaking as a television person that does SEC football games, I would love to get rid of that second to last Saturday in November for the end of the where I get some of the worst games that have ever been put on television. Listen, I'll tell you a quick story. 5 years ago, I'm doing a Coastal Carolina game at Alabama, and Coastal was going to make the playoffs, and they were in the FCS at the time, and they were going to go to the playoffs, and I'm thinking Alabama's going to sit all their players for the Auburn game. Turns out that Coastal was going to the playoffs the very next week, so they sat all their guys, so I basically had Alabama playing a glorified high school football team on a Saturday in November, and ever since then, I'm like, we've got to stop doing this.
Yeah.
So I'm a nine game guy, just selfishly. But I think really for the whole league, I think it needs to be 9, and I think that's where they'll settle on before at least when Oklahoma and Texas get in.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that's where it's headed and ultimately going to be in a couple of years. So let's start with the team in the state east of here. They've been number one basically all year long. It's hard to pick holes on this Vols team, but I'll tell you what they do have. They have one thing working against them, and that's just history. Right? I mean, 1999 was the last number one team to complete the journey all the way to the end. And so that's what they have stacked up against them. But when you look at this Tennessee team, they certainly have the goods to go all the way, but can they?
I think they will. I think that there is something to that. People go, oh, well, that's just – well, it's been 21 years since the number one team has won it all. And so, I mean, there is something to that, whether it's the burden of that, or maybe the complacency after being a dominant team all year long, that somehow you just think you're invincible when in reality you're not. It's a game and things go against you and all that stuff that goes into that, the psyche of being a number one seed. It is truly amazing. I've been doing SEC baseball since 1996. So I can't go back, 50 years, but I can go back quite a ways. And I'll tell you boys this, that I have never in my life seen a baseball team as big, strong, physical, talented as this Tennessee team. And there have been some really good ones through LSU, and Vanderbilt has run out some unbelievable teams out there. There were some Alabama teams back in the late 90s that were just fantastic. But this is something that's just off the charts to me. And it's – I don't want to say it came out of nowhere, because they've had a really good run the last couple of years. You know, even in COVID, they were trending in the right direction. The year before COVID, they were really good. And last year, they were really good. But this is just crazy what they're doing now. I live in Atlanta, and this has become a topic of conversation among the casual sports fan. That's how big a deal Tennessee baseball has become. And I don't know that anybody's ever really like living in this town and hanging out with my buddies and stuff and just playing some golf with some folks or being around a pool. College baseball is never a topic of conversation unless you're a diehard. Tennessee has kind of bridged that gap to the casual college sports fan, which just to me it's just an amazing thing, and I love it. I love every bit of it.
Dave Neal is with us for the SEC Network. Dave, what regional do you have this year?
I'll be at Texas A&M. I've got Texas A&M and TCU are the two main teams out there. But I'll be certainly having my eyes on what's going on in Tennessee. And the other one, look, Willie, you guys live right there. I mean, it's been a disappointment for Vanderbilt. And they're in a brutal regional. Oregon State's playing, they're playing great baseball, not Tennessee level, but they're playing great. And that's a tough regional. And I hate it. I love Corpse to death. But this team's just not Vanderbilt baseball. I couldn't tell you why. Like, why is this team not like the others? But, I mean, the product, if anybody's watched them, it's just not the same as it's been the last 15 years. So I'll be keeping an eye on them just because I'm a big fan of Corbs and this team, wanted to win a few ball games, but it's going to be a tough road for those guys.
Dave, you guys have done a great job, I think, chronicling throughout the season why there haven't been quite as many juggernauts in the league. So we're kind of kicking around the idea of how many SEC teams will make it to Omaha, because in a good year, as you know, usually three find their way there. We know Tennessee is an overwhelming favorite to at least get to Omaha. Do you think the number is three? Do you think three will find one way or the other their way out there?
Well, I'll say this: I think a three would be a major accomplishment this year. Tennessee and Texas A&M are really the two top eight national seeds that have the opportunity to host the super regionals. And when you get to host a super regional, your chances of making it to Omaha is like 71%. And on the road, obviously, it is so tough in that environment, which I love this. I love the format of the NCAA tournament. I love the super regional thing. And listen, if you play well during the regular season, you're rewarded by getting to host this stuff. And that's to your advantage to play every game as hard as you can play and win as many as you can play. And you can't lay down for a single game because it could cost you. And I love that part of it. But it is hard to win on the road in the super regionals. So to me, if they were able to get three in there, that would be a huge success. You know, there's Florida and Auburn sitting there. It's 13 and 14 seeds. Florida finished great. I mean, they really, the last 3 weeks of the season, they just kind of found something. But I still think that they're not a national championship team. Now, anything can happen, but I just don't see the pieces there, especially in the pitching staff. So I think it's a two-team. I think that you got the two top eight national seeds. Tennessee and A&M are your best chances, and that would be a down year. I mean, that's just the reality of SEC baseball. Three and four teams, usually in Omaha, and this year I think two would probably be a great number.
Last thing for you from my end, Dave. This is a great theme that you guys have discussed. You know, lack of ace pitchers. Certainly Vanderbilt's best pitchers are younger. They're not as dominant. There's a lot of teams that kind of have that. The other theme that we've talked about a lot is the bats, right? Or the perception anyway. The offense is up. The numbers are what they are, but there's a lot of theories as to why, and some of it is that maybe people have figured out a way, or the bats are a little lively or something like that. Do you subscribe to that? Because that's something a lot of casual fans might notice when these regionals get started.
Well, listen, the answer to your question is yes, I think something's going on with the bat. But anytime I say that, I get somebody calling me from a conference office or an NCAA or somebody at a Batman. All these bats are tested before the games, as we all know, as we learned. I happened to be there for that Tennessee Vandy series when Batgate was going on, and these things are tested. I'll quickly say they put a ring on them to make sure the diameter of the barrel is a certain thing. They look for dents and cracks in the bat, which could help the spring-like effect off the club head if they're dented a little bit. And then they put them in a machine to check the compression of the barrel so it can't be over a certain amount of pressure in there. Which provides you, they're trying to limit, the spring-like effect. So these bats are all tested. But I'm telling you, these bats that this year that these guys have, look like they're 10 years old. All the paint's worn off of them.
Yep.
They're chipped. I've never seen bats before and since they've gone to this BB Corps thing in the last 10 years look like this. So, I mean, all the bat manufacturers get together and say, let's put cheap paint on the bat? I don't know, man. There's something fishy about it. But I get reprimanded for saying that, but I'm with you. There's something going on. And the other point of this, and I'll leave it here, is that it takes about 4 or 5 years for college baseball to cycle into kind of the trends of Major League Baseball. But college baseball this year, just using the SEC tournament as an example, set a record for strikeouts and a record for home runs. It is a strikeout home run game at the big league level, and it's turned into that at the college level. Kids bigger, stronger, faster, obviously throwing it harder. And I think that's the way it's trending. But, Willie, just to answer your question, I do think there's something up there.
It's no different on the major league level. Dave, I was at Truist Park on Sunday, Braves Marlins. I think the final was 6-3, six home runs.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what college is going to now. If it's your team hitting all the home runs, that's great. But if it's your team striking out, that's no good. Nobody likes
yeah.
that.
What, by the way, what region do you have?
I'll be Texas A&M,
okay.
TCU, Louisiana, and I get cranked up tomorrow at 2:00. I'll be. You're going to have to really work to find me tomorrow. Our showcase is Texas A&M and TCU. Texas A&M's coach just left TCU, and it wasn't a great departure, and so there's a little history and rivalry there. So. You have to find me on Saturday. So just take a day off from Dave tomorrow, and then look me up on Saturday.
Dave, yeah. Really appreciate it. Enjoy it. Thanks for doing this, and we'll talk to you down the road.
All right, guys. Thanks very much. Have a great rest of the week.
All right, you do the same. That is Dave Neal, play-by-play guy, ESPN SEC Network. He's got the A&M region. We'll come back, wrap up the third hour of the DDC next. It looks like Fitzmagic no more.
What?
Ryan Fitzpatrick apparently is calling it a career.
So he's done stealing.
He is done stealing.
Yeah.
There are reports out there that he is in deep negotiations to be an analyst on Amazon Prime Thursday Night Football coverage.
Hmm.
Now, this was a long time ago when he was with the Titans.
Mm-hmm.
We were at training camp, and Ryan Fitzpatrick sat down at our table, and we interviewed him, and we had Ryan on probably – two or three times when he was a Titan. Not the most engaging guy ever.
Hmm.
I know he's smart quarterback.
Yeah.
Went to Harvard.
Harvard.
Not much of a talker.
Mm-hmm.
I know he kind of morphed into, that's what kind of cracked me up when became, you know.
Fitzmagic.
Because his personality here was a dud.
Wah, wah, wah.
He was, I mean, he had nothing to say. He's mumbled with his big mm-hmm. beard. But,
did he cut down a beard? Did they show a picture of him?
No, I don't have a picture. Said also he could join the studio team, which would include Marshawn Lynch, Tony Gonzalez, Richard Sherman. I would say he's best suited for a studio
mm-hmm.
with like a cast of
instead
people
of,
as
yeah.
opposed to being an analyst on a game.
That's tough. That's tough.
That's just my opinion. Yeah. I don't know. Like I said, it's been a while since mm-hmm. we've been around.
And he could have developed a
personality. Is it Fitzpatrick or Fitzmagic? I don't know which one.
It's both.
So which one would they be hiring? Fitzmagic, right?
Yeah.
You can't hire Fitzmagic. Yeah. You can't hire Fitzpatrick.
Yeah, you can't. Yeah.
So, yeah. So we'll see what happens. But he is done, as you said, robbing
teams
in yeah. the NFL.
Well, he did a good job at it, man.
Oh, he did yeah. a great job at it.
Because he'll throw you 5 touchdowns, but he also throw you 7 interceptions. Teams loved it. They kept on giving him an opportunity.
So, he made
a lot
honestly,
of money. Yeah.
At least $100 million, right?
Oh, of course.
At least.
He's made a lot of money.
At least $100 million.
Being primarily a backup. You know?
I remember when he moved here, Willie, he bought Liz Allison's house.
Oh, wow. Oh, Liz.
Really?
Vroom, vroom. Come on, Ryan. Well, we're going racing.
Let's ask the question here, though, that we've been asking about in this day and age mm-hmm. of especially football analysts. How much more money do you think he's making as an analyst than he would have made if he latched on somewhere?
Well, he's probably making more if he latched on somewhere.
You think so? I'll bet.
Because he's one of those. He's one of those guys where it's sort of, I don't know, an enigma in a sense. I don't know. He's one of those guys that he will light it up.
Oh, yeah. He can tantalize you. There's no
question.
But
then he can also make you think, like, why did we sign this guy?
Of course. He does both in a 3 or 4 week span.
Yes.
But I'm just saying, at this point in his career, I don't know that he would make a lot of money as a quarterback. I'm just wondering if he
with his numbers, he still would make at least 5 or 6, you know,
well,
4 years,
what I'm
7
is
4 years.
Is he still at that point? There was a point where he was probably one of the best options as a backup. He was in the top 5 or 10 backups easily, maybe the top 5 for sure at one point. But now here we are. He was also, you know, kind of that guy you could put as a placeholder. Hey, we don't have anybody else right now, so who do we get? Well, let's get him. That's he started for a lot of teams in that category. The Titans were one of them. But at this stage of his career, I wonder if he looked at the money and said, you know what? This is a good time to get into this business. Look at what all these analysts are getting.
Well, and then you're at a startup.
And you don't have to get your brains beat in.
Yeah. And you're at Amazon. They're just now starting to
put
together their team. Yeah.
Amazon is not lacking in money.
No.
Is he the GOAT, you think?
The GOAT of what?
Best backup ever?
I would have to think about
it. I think Frank Reich would have to be in the category of best backup ever.
Right? Exactly. Nick Foles.
Nick Foles having won a Super Bowl.
Who's on the Mount Rushmore of backups?
Don Strock.
Kurt Warner would be.
Don Strock.
He was a backup until he won a Super Bowl.
Yeah, but he was never really just the – well, I guess.
He was the backup to Trent Green.
Yeah, but I mean, Trent Green got hurt in training camp or in preseason.
Was it in preseason?
Yeah, he got hurt in preseason.
But he still was the backup.
Yeah.
So he could be the greatest backup ever. Because he was backing up a guy that got injured, and he ended up winning the Super Bowl.
Fitzpatrick.
There's different categories.
Did he start more games than he sat? Probably yes, right? Yeah, he definitely started more than he sat.
But let's I don't know. Let's keep the category to backups who were always backups.
Oh, backups who were always backups.
Not like, because like Steve Young was Joe Montana's backup for a while, but he wasn't a backup.
Yeah, Jeff Ostedler had a good stretch. Put him in there.
Yeah, but they always
end
up.
He went on to be a starter for a number of years after he got
right.
The
that's
shot.
What I'm saying. You can't be a great backup, because if you're a great backup, eventually you're going to get
a shot at starting.
So it has to be how many? If you're going to say that, then it has to be a cap on.
Like Scott Mitchell was the backup to Dan Marino, and he played like 5 games, and then he got the big contract for the Lions,
and he was horrible.
I'm thinking the backups.
He was horrible in Detroit. He wasn't good in Detroit. No, he wasn't good.
They led him to the playoffs.
No, he wasn't. It wasn't Barry Sanders. Okay, come on now. When you have Barry Sanders and Herman Moore and Johnny Morton, you should. Brent Perriman. Yes, you should.
But he wasn't horrible.
He wasn't good.
He wasn't great.
He wasn't good.
He was in the.
He was okay.
Okay.
Yeah, he was okay.
But I mean, the backup eventually always gets a shot at being a starter for a bit.
So you would probably phrase
it
as,
you do it?
You know, a backup for at least 3 or 4 years.
Kelly
Holcomb. Frank Reich would be good.
Kelly Holcomb.
Right.
At one point, he had led Cleveland to their only, you know, playoff game in years.
Decades.
Yeah, and they should have won that game.
Should have won.
So, let me see. Another backup. Man, there's not many that actually get an opportunity.
Steve Bono.
Ooh, Steve Bono. Man, he was supposed to be like the next guy up.
What about
in
Vince
San Francisco?
Evans?
He's in a category all by himself.
Yeah.
Josh Johnson is catching up with Vince Evans for, you know,
he
playing
is.
In like seven decades for like 12 different teams.
Isn't Colt McCoy the same boat?
Colt McCoy is a good one, yeah. Good one.
Kerry Collins was a backup here.
Yeah.
Then he became
a
starter.
He was a starter.
I know.
I know.
I'm trying to think. Who was the backup in Washington back in those days? Because Doug Williams came from Tampa to Washington as the starter, didn't he? Did they bring him there, or was he the backup at first?
Yeah, well, Jay Schrader was in there. Mm-hmm. You know, he backed up Joe Theismann until the infamous Monday night.
Yeah, and then he came in.
Yeah, and then a couple years later, they brought Doug Williams in. But
Billy Volek.
Yeah, Billy Volek. But his stint was so short.
But again, that's what I'm
saying. In the Don Strock category, you know who ended up being a backup a lot in different places or a starter that became – how about Steve DeBerg?
Steve DeBerg.
But he was a starter in Atlanta, wasn't he?
He was a starter.
Several places.
Yeah.
Several places. And then they would always draft the franchise guy. Remember, yep. It was Steve DeBerg and then John Elway.
Yep.
And then he went to Tampa and they drafted Vinny Testaverde. You know, it was just like, of course, before that, he was in San Fran and they drafted Joe Montana. So he was always the starter that set the table and then they bring in the next franchise guy.
Come back, final hour. We'll start things with Elliot Freeman next.